minor contrast with this and what's in Galatians chapter 5, the fruit of the Spirit. Fruit of the Spirit is talking about things we actually do as a result of what God's Word directs us to do. On the other hand, when there are certain circumstances which arise in a congregation, and they had a problem there, they had a problem from the outside, remember, the individuals were following Paul around and making life so challenging for him when he'd go to a synagogue to teach. And of course, eventually he would be run out of most towns. But they also had the problem of two individuals who were having difficulty getting along. We don't know what the problem is, but we know really what the solution is. And that's found pretty much all through at least every chapter of this particular letter. We've gotten to the end of it. We're going to talk about what's excellent, or if there is anything excellent, or if there's anything of high regard. And then this evening will be the closing lesson on this particular subject. I think it's very meaningful to me that in order to get ourselves going in the right direction and dealing with problems, particularly interpersonal ones, is that it has a lot to do with just what we're thinking. And as I've tried to point out, I'm not talking about positive thinking per se. Sometimes these things just make things seem a little bit unsignificant or insignificant because they get cliched into that little category. There are just certain things you ought to have on your mind is what Paul is saying. And that's what he talks about when he says it. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, and whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. Now, I think sometimes we'll look at this and we'll say, well, here's the answer to all of this. Just think about Christ all the time, or think about God all the time. And that certainly would be a reasonable thing for us all to do, given the fact that we are followers of Christ. Nevertheless, I think it's talking about more than that. It's talking about your general observation powers, where you notice things, you're aware of things, and then you choose to think about those things over the bad stuff. Because as we are often pointing out, there's just a lot that's not good around us. And it may not be in our families, or it may be in the community, it may be in the world as a whole. I understand that. But if you want to, you can think about that stuff all the time. But what Paul is saying for these individuals, particularly when people have differences and they can't seem to find common ground, well, you need to do things that are going to help you to find common ground. And of course, this is true in any relationship. And so we look at what we are told here and brings it all together. If there's something excellent or something worthy of respect, something ideal, then think about that as something that is worthy of being in your mind when you know there's less ideal out there then certainly there is the bad stuff. And I hope that put that as simply as possible. I need to have my mind on the things that take me to this higher plane. Remember, thinking higher things is what the lesson is all about. We're told that we are given the responsibility. In Hebrews, the 5th chapter, in verse 12, just skip on down to verse 14, it says, solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. So determining what is excellent is part of our responsibility, or determining what any of these things are. And I realize that we're not always going to get the right conclusion. We may have different conclusions, which are just as right or just as wrong. But nevertheless, this idea of discernment, because I think it's very easy to say, well, the only thing that's really excellent is Christ. And you would know in a sense that that's true. But there is excellence around us. We're going to talk just a little bit about that as regards to the man Abraham. But the people in Philippi were also given, I think, interestingly enough, the same sort of discernment exhortation. You need to be discerning people. Why? So you can find that stuff, the sort of stuff that's described there in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. God is my witness how I long for you all with the affection of Christ Jesus. This I pray, that your love may still abound more and more in real knowledge and discernment. That's thinking things through. weighing the good and the bad. Realizing that there are certain things, as it says here, so that you may approve things that are excellent in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. Now, as I reach the higher plane of recognizing that the way I'm going to be faithful to God is through recognizing who Christ is, because when his day comes, or if we would call it the day of judgment, day of reckoning, then it's knowing what is excellence through Christ is going to help me to understand how I am in a right relationship with God. Just like when we sing the song, Amazing Grace, it gives us then the ability to think and to understand how it is we are right with God. And so we have to be thinking about that kind of thing. Think about the things that are excellent. Now, the story of Lot and Abraham at least allows for me, and please be patient with me in terms of my conclusion as to this being a reasonable thing to consider. It's because you look at two particular guys here. Now, neither one of them are flawless. I think you would say that Lot is probably less excellent than Abraham. But nevertheless, he has some of his good qualities, and it's up to me and you to discern that. He's referred to by Peter in his letter, one of his letters, I think it's 2 Peter, as righteous Lot. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment here and realize that there ought to be things that come into your head that are probably not particularly at least righteous or good about Lot. I mean, he's making things out of certain things which are not helpful to him in any way. And you would probably then conclude he's not a good guy. Or how could you say he's righteous, Peter? So you understand that we're not talking, as we always try to draw this concern, and that is, whenever we talk about calling someone righteous, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are perfect. And it's clearly told me and you that he's not perfect. But he's called righteous by Lot. Now, you might be thinking, well, maybe he's comparing him with Sodom, where he dwelled, and the people there certainly weren't righteous or good or right. But that's usually what people think about when you think about Lot. And you think about the fact that his wife died, tried to escape when God decided that he was going to destroy the town. But what we know about him is that he is the nephew of Abraham and Sarah. And he travels with them. Genesis 12:5, it says, Abram took Sarai, his wife. This is before I said Abraham. But this is when their names were still the names before Abraham and Sarah. And Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions, which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and thus they came to the land of Canaan. So you realize that Abraham, or Abram at this time, is there dwelling up in, you know, part of what might have eventually become the Assyrian Empire, and God tells him to get up and go, and he does. And most of us are aware of that from Genesis chapter 12, and it's a great place to start when we're trying to factor in our own minds, okay, what does it mean to be a person who believes in God? And we use that as an example. When God says, do something, well, then we respond with respect for him. But Lot is a part of this, and we don't really know why. It's not really explained anywhere why he was with him. I mean, obviously, he has a pretty substantial party, the way it's described there. But nevertheless, when we think about Lot, he's a younger guy. We don't know how young he is. And he's traveling with Abram and Sarai. So as they're traveling, in Genesis 13 and verse 1, it says, Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, that's getting back over to Israel after they had left the area of Canaan where he had gone, because they had a famine, he'd gone over to Egypt. Now he's traveling back, going that direction. The Negev would be the southern mountains, the southern deserts, south of Israel as we know it today. He and his wife and all that belonged to him, and Lot with him, and Abram was very rich in livestock and in silver and in gold. So he's really a part of what's a pretty good deal here. I mean, Abraham is doing just fine. He's got quite a party. He actually has enough people with him to put together an army, we're going to find out. But Lot is there sharing in all the great things that are part of the blessings of our friend Abraham. But they get back to the land of Canaan, and things are really, really exploding for them. Things are just really looking good, and the possessions are expanding. And so it gets really crowded. And you can go read the story about that. And so Abraham just doesn't really want the conflict at all, because there was conflict between Lot's guys and Abram's guys. And he just says, here's the solution. You take what's yours, or you take what you want, and you go, and I'll be fine. What an incredible attitude. Now, we're talking about Lot here, but we also realize we're making a comparison between Lot and Abram. And obviously, Abraham comes out looking much better than Lot. Maybe it's because of his experience, or maybe it's because he shows himself in certain situations as being, in one case here, magnanimous. I mean, he really is doing here what most of us would say, well, wait a minute. Lot, you're just a young guy. What right do you have to all this stuff? And he could have said, I'll tell you what you get, and you'll be happy when you get it. But he doesn't. He doesn't do that. So right there, you see this comparison. All right. Lot is generally a good guy. Peter calls him righteous. And we learn a lot of really great things about Abraham. So you and I now have to discern. We have to make our judgments. And we have to be careful when we make such judgments. And we realize ultimately that God's the final judge of everything. But here's the thing. What we're trying to discuss here this morning is, how can I get my brain in a place where I'm not going to just dwell on all the negativity that's around me? Or the things that I find so uncomfortable about the people who are around me. That's usually where most of the problems lie. So you can dwell on that. And I'm not saying, you know, try to look at that particular person or that group of people or whatever in a positive way, per se. What I'm talking about is that, look, there is going to be things that you don't like in life and things that are wrong that you don't want around you in life. But don't dwell on that. Think on these things. Think on the things that are excellent. In this particular case, I think what we're making the case for is, you know, thinking about Abraham is not a bad thing. When you're thinking about great people, I mean, there are fantastic people in Scripture that would be called excellent. Samuel, Daniel, Ruth, David, Esther. And, you know, the guy who ends up looking the most is Enoch, because he walked with God and that's all we know about him. But, you know, if we knew as much about Enoch as we did Abraham, we'd probably know some other stuff about him. But, I mean, he walked with God. And I think sometimes we're thinking, well, man, if God just takes him, this guy, if anybody was perfect, this guy is perfect. But that's not what it says. It just said he walked with God. And there are other people who walked with God who were people who had their own faults. But here's the thing. Discerning. Realizing that you could look at Lot and you could look at all the stupid decisions he makes, the selfish decisions he makes, and even the lack of common sense to where he stays in this incredibly evil, evil place. And you could think about that all you want. But you see, that's not thinking on excellent things. Now, I believe this is the same for you and me. There are things out there that are excellent. There are excellent ideas. There are excellent people. We have excellent people here. There are people that you know in other places that you would call excellent. And your mind is open to thinking about those individuals. But it's a conscious choice that you and I must make. Because we can think about the lots in the world. And sometimes that kind of thinking, those sorts of comparisons, cause us to just look like we're better or to think we're better than other people. And so when you're thinking about comparisons, you'd probably be okay to compare yourself with Lot if it's a matter of how am I going to look. But it's not a matter of how you're going to look. It's a matter of how you're going to look at the world around you and what you're going to choose to think about. Because when they individuals, the two ladies, were not able to get along, it needed a solution. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Just reminding ourselves of these two ladies, Euodia and Syntyche. Now, knowing that this has somehow got to be cured, and I've tried to point out to you that Paul doesn't say, look, here's the right person, here's the wrong person. And I've often said, too, that I don't know if he would have said that if that was really the case, because I think it'd be just as likely for him to say, you guys need to figure this thing out for yourselves. I'll give you the information, but I'll tell you what he talks about in Philippians. He talks more about an attitude that is going to be essential, the selflessness, most specifically, i.e. chapter 2, that is going to be essential to resolve this thing in some way. So here's the selfishness of Lot, verse 11, when he's presented with all this stuff, that Abram says, hey, take what you want and go. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley, moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now, I don't know that we could say specifically that Sodom was a really bad place then, but it certainly ends up being a bad place. But here's Lot. He makes this decision. He makes this poor decision. Ends up because the king of Sodom gets in a war with some of the surrounding kings. Ends up, he needs to be rescued. Lot needs to be rescued. And that's exactly what our guy that seems to be leaning more toward our looking at him and saying, now there's somebody. When I'm looking at the world and I'm getting a little bit discouraged, I think I'm going to be thinking about Abram here. Abraham, I'm not going to think about Lot because Lot's not going to lift me up in any way. At least for the most part, he doesn't. As I said, the only thing that actually he does is that in comparison to the people in Sodom, he's a good guy. But he has a lot of negative qualities, as we've already pointed out. So, it says in verse 14, Abram heard about this fix that Lot had placed himself in by the choices that he made by moving down there. He let out his trained men born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. So that tells you pretty much how rich Abraham was. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants and defeated them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods and also brought back his relative Lot with his possession and also the women and the people. So there he is. Lot's a pretty needy guy in many ways. He certainly took things from Abraham that you could easily make an argument that Abraham's the one who really should have had those things. But eventually what happens is the town of Sodom and Gomorrah, they become so evil that God determines that he's going to destroy them. Remember what happened. This exchange between Abraham and God, and God said, if you can find a non-wicked person here, I won't destroy the town. You know, it started out at a higher number and it works its way back down. Many of you know the story, but there were just no righteous people there, save Lot and his family. So it's time to get out of there. They got all their families. In fact, it's so dangerous at this time. It says the men seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, and they brought him out and put him outside the city. I mean, they were just saved by the skin of their teeth, as we say. When they had all brought them outside, one said, escape for your life and do not look behind you and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains and you will be swept away. Or you will be swept away. We know what happened. They didn't do that. Or they did that, but Lot's wife. chose to look back, and then we know what the consequences were of that. So Sodom and Gomorrah is destroyed, and that's what we know on the surface of Lot. Now, you're challenged to discern, just like the Philippians were challenged to discern, what's your estimation of Lot? Now, you don't ignore it. You don't whitewash who he was, what he did, and the decisions that he made, and say, well, nobody's perfect, and all the kinds of things that we do to, you know, kind of soften the power of God's word. But what we do is we start thinking, maybe when I'm discouraged with the world, maybe Lot's not the guy I'm going to be thinking of if I want to be encouraged. Now, does that make sense? It doesn't mean you don't think about him, because you can learn a lot of lessons from him. But if you're doing the best you can to not hang your life all over what's bad out there, why would you really want to think about him? Why would I want to think about him if I want to think of things that are excellent? So you look at the life of Abraham, and this is a guy that really shines as being one who is chosen by God to be the one through whom the Messiah is going to come, to put it in a nutshell. It all starts with Genesis 12. And the desire for Abram and Sarah to have a child, to have a son, because this was the promise, because it was going to be through his seed that many nations were going to be blessed. If he doesn't have this son, that's not going to be able to happen. And so some things are about to happen that are going to affect Abraham in a very negative way. And God says, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Since Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed. I have chosen him so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, and so that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. Now, this is what's placed upon Abram or Abraham. That great things are going to come from him, and great things are going to happen for him. And in order for all that to happen, then he's going to have to remain faithful to God. He will remain faithful to God. Now, when you look at the beginning of what we know about Lot, we don't really hear about anything that's placed upon him as responsibility. Certainly, this kind of responsibility. And this already tells us that, you know, you look at that kind of life, and you're saying, boy, that must have been something that could have been a real burden to a guy. But despite the little hitches that he has from time to time, he sticks with it and he keeps on believing. Very simply, he looks pretty excellent to me in terms of what's expected of him. Excellence is expected of him. He has a great responsibility to continue to promote that which is right and good amongst his family. Notice his character. If you remember the story, after these wars between the various kingdoms and how Sodom was defeated, or actually in this one, Sodom ends up winning. But after his return from the defeat of Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him, the king of Sodom went out to meet him at the Valley of Shaveh. That is the king's valley. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. And now he was a priest of God, Most High. He blessed him and he said, blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And just as a matter of fact here, what happens is here is Melchizedek there to bless him. He's the priest of the high God, the Most High God. And Abram quite happily receives that blessing. On the other hand, he has another individual who wants to make a deal with him, and that's the king of Sodom. And Sodom makes the deal. Go back to verse 20 before we get to what he actually says. Blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. He gave him 10th of all. And that was what was given to Melchizedek. The king of Sodom then said to Abram, give the people to me and take the goods for yourself. So whatever individual had been captured. You'd give me those, and then you take all the goods. Now, here's what a person of excellence does. He happily receives what Melchizedek offers to him, but listen, he says, I have sworn to the Lord God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take a thread or a sandal, thong, or anything that is yours, for fear you would say, I have made Abram rich. And I will take nothing except what the young men have eaten and the share of the men who went with me. Now, if you're looking at a person who has the ability to make choices, and he can choose what is not so good, and he can choose what is the best, look at the example that he gives us. I'm not going to connect myself with you in any way, Mr. King of Sodom. I'm not going to do it. I don't want people to think that I have any kind of a relationship with you. So I don't want to make a deal with you. Now, the story that which we've already given some summation, which follows, or at least is a part of this whole event as relates to Lot, was when there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram and the herdsmen of Lot. And they were living there in Canaan, where the Canaanite and Perizzite lived. And of course, we know what he did. We know what Abram did. He chose to do what? He chose to avoid conflict. I know this is very difficult for us from time to time. We get in these situations where something's there, and two parties have some right to whatever it is that's there. And a lot of times you don't see it turning out like this. Now, I'll tell you the reason I think it turned out. Was because, not because Lot was, you know, kind of at least somewhat agreeable. No, it was because Abram knew God had promised great things for him, and that's what's going to happen, and I will accept that, and so I'm not going to worry about whether I'm being cheated or not. This happens far too often in homes, amongst family members. Abram could have said, Lot, you just joined this family. You have no right to anything. But he wanted no strife. That's a pretty high calling, isn't it? One of those nice things to think of, maybe when you're in the middle of a situation like this and you're thinking about what's the best way for this to resolve itself. It wasn't a matter of determining, well, what's fair? Because it seems to me it's clear what's fair. Abraham should have gotten the stuff. But what was right and what was excellent, it was to say, we don't need conflict. You take what you want. And of course, as it turned out, he took the best, didn't he, Lot? And you could easily then draw the conclusion that, you know, there ought to be a verse that follows here that says, and, you know, Abram never forgave him for doing that. He should have known that I wanted him to take the least. This is what happens a lot in these situations. Everybody's expecting everybody to read one another's minds about what they ought to do. And you get to thinking the way you're thinking about it, and you think, without even saying anything about it, that maybe the party with whom you're differing is supposed to understand what's the right thing. See, Abraham, excellent people just determine what is the right thing. They realize that fairness is, in some ways, it's just really something that can't drive the life of a Christian. I think it can be worked out if you have the right people involved in it. But in certain situations, somebody's just got to take the hit. And what we know about Abram is that he just rolled with Lot's greed. Now think about the situation. As you and I are maybe trying to help out the ladies there in Philippi. Maybe this is really the solution to this. Maybe one of them is just going to have to realize there's a greater good. That's what I am going to place at the priority and at the essence, the core of my life. And I do not want this church to be a mess. And so I am going to take the hit. Now, if you're looking at Lot as being the great example, then you're probably not going to come to that conclusion. But if you're looking at a guy of excellence, a guy of repute, a guy who's worthy of praise, you're going, wow, he must have really trusted what God said. There are people who are out there like that. And maybe you even know the same in your own life, in your own circle, people who are like that. So don't focus on people who are just grabbing things. You just focus on the things that represent to all of us a heart of charity and a heart of saying, I don't want to be the source of conflict. He struggled with belief, Abraham did. Certain things that happened that made you wonder how much he actually was trusting in God. You know, there were the two times, probably won't have time to get to the whole representation of this, two times where he lied about whether Sarah was his wife or not in order to save his life. Now, the interesting thing is that, of course, there's the promise, through your seed many will be blessed, and he maybe is thinking, because Abraham was not one who was hesitant to sort of help God out if he thought it was going to be, in his own mind, the right thing. Remember how he ended up with a child, with Hagar? Because it looked like he and Sarah weren't going to have a child. Well, maybe in those particular cases of where he lied about his relationship with Sarah, maybe he's just thinking, well, I'm going to be blessed. God promised this to me. I need to stay alive. So maybe he was thinking that it was the okay thing to do. But at the same time, when the rubber really met the road in Genesis 22, where we got this situation with God saying, okay, I want you to go offer your son. Now, what we're told later on in the New Testament is he went ahead to do what God said. He was quite willing to carry it out. And why was he willing to do that? Because he believed God could raise Isaac from the dead. Now, I could look at Abraham, the good guy, and generally excellent. I could look at these two particular incidents where he actually lies. And it's just right out there in front of us. There's no apologies that are made for it. It's in the earlier chapters and also in chapter 20. But he kept on believing. And that's one of the things that just makes him so significant and important, is someone I want to think about. I want to have in my mind when there is so much garbage out there that I could choose to have in my mind. I want to think about the one who does those things which can easily be discerned as excellent. So the promise again is made when Abram is struggling. Abram said, O Lord God, will you give me, since I am childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? So how about him? Will he work? Abram said, since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir. Then behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body, and he shall be your heir. And he took him outside and said, now look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. I mean, I could almost imagine myself in this situation. And I'm thinking, you know, God, I think I've been a source of embarrassment in many ways because I keep trying to fix this thing myself. But God teaches, God exhorts Abraham and says, look, I am going to make this happen. It's going to work. So he struggles. He's doubtful. He and Sarah even laugh about things. But he sticks with it. He keeps on believing, and God has to adjust him every once in a while, but he does. In fact, this sense that he had that's found in Genesis 17:17, which says that Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, this is when God had told him again, he's going to have a child. Will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? I mean, it didn't make sense to him. But he hung in there. Now, I could take the negative route. I could take what is not excellent in the life of Abram and focus upon that. But see, if I'm going to try to be a person who is looking at the brighter side, if you will, of things, the more productive side of things, then I'm going to look at Abram and try to understand him from a point of view that says, this is a guy that is worthy of praise. And of course, I've already alluded to the fact that God told him to go offer Isaac his son. Verse 2, Genesis 22. Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. How would you have reacted to that? After all these things that you've been through here, God finally gave you a son. He's growing up. And now he says, go kill him. So Abram rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place which God had told him to go. He just did it. But as we have already noted within these stories, that he did have his flaws. There was the time he wanted God to just take Ishmael. We already know that he wanted the servant to maybe be his heir. So this isn't the first time. And I look at that and I say, what's your problem, Abram? What's your problem, Abraham? Why don't you just believe God? And I might choose to be somewhat negative about him, and maybe rightly so in some respects. But what you and I should do is we look at how Abraham just constantly gets up. That when he is confronted with his unfaithfulness, he moves into a positive direction. He even lies, as we've already noted. So he had his flaws. But he is presented to us in the New Testament as a very profound figure. In Romans 4, chapter verse 11 to 25, he's presented to us as being the father of all believers. Go read the whole text and try to get more insight into the life of Abraham. But realize, you understand that he is a great picture of belief because of his willingness to keep listening to God. Not because he didn't go through doubt. Not because he wasn't discouraged, or not because he at times thought God needed help, but he just kept believing. We know we have this great example, Rick's been talking about in James 2, that he is the example of faith. What does faith do? It acts. And James just makes that about as plain as it can be made. I know we oftentimes dance around this because we don't want to make it sound like people are earning their salvation, but look. That's what it says. And he's presented. I mean, it's good enough. This guy who's the father of believers in Romans, the fourth chapter. And everybody I know, I mean, anything Paul says about what salvation is all about in Romans, just everybody's ready to jump on board with that. But there's also this part of it, that he is an example of true faith. And he uses the example of being willing to go give his son, that he went through all of this to get this son. God says, I want you to sacrifice him. He just goes. And of course, God takes care of the situation. Finally, look how he's described in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which was to receive for an inheritance. So the get up and go, Genesis 12. which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for a city, or the city, which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "In Isaac your descendants shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. I am meant to be a discerning person. You are meant, I think, through what is taught to us through the letter to the Philippians, is that we are to be the kind of people, when we look at Philippians 4 and verse 8, and we need to have to try to work our way through what's honorable and whatever is right, whatever is pure. We need to come to an understanding of one of these things so that we can discern what that is. And why it is so important that I think about things in this way. And why it's going to help the situation. I mean, you think about the conflict that's there. And you could look at verse 8 and say, yes, this is what's going to fix it. If the mindset of the individuals who are involved in this conflict will just think in this way. Let alone the selflessness of Philippians chapter 2. This thing can get better. May not be resolved, but this thing can get better because they were willing to think on a higher level and not just the level that was in their interest. And sometimes that's the only way things get resolved. Abraham was a great example of faith. If you want to learn about excellence of faith, the Hebrew letter helps me and you to know that that's the right place to go. Lot, on the other hand, is thought in a very different way. As someone who made a lot of silly decisions that affected his family, and he was also a selfish person. Maybe in his youth that was the way he was, maybe he changed later, I don't know. But nevertheless, if I'm going to focus on something that's going to raise me to a level where I'm looking more positive at what's around me, I'm looking for people who are excellent. I'm just not going to focus on the ones that are so easily put on the spot in my own mind and condemn them for whatever reason, to make myself feel better, whatever it may be. So, think on these things. And I pointed out when we started this a few weeks ago that it would be so good for us to look at these characteristics here and say, this is the day I'm going to think about nothing but honorable things. I'm not going to think about one dishonorable thing. I'm going to focus on what is honorable and just go right on down the line. And I just am convinced. I mean, there's a reason why Paul put that in there. He wouldn't have put it there with the help of the Holy Spirit if he didn't believe it was going to help. So I bet it can help me, and I bet it can help you. Think on these things and see how your world can improve. Because if you're going to think on the opposite of these things, it's not going to get better. You're going to be so discouraged, you're not even going to want to get up out of bed in the morning. Think on these things. See what will happen. Jesus came to die for us. You know, that's the answer. You know, Clay talked about the justice of God and how God still has wrath. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Wrath is very much of the justice of God, that sin is punishable by death. It started that way in the garden. But Jesus resolved that for me and for you, because it's through what Jesus has done and how he has done for me what I could not do for myself or you. How he has done that. And the justice of God is still there. But salvation is there through Jesus. And so that's why we invite people to become Christians. Why we encourage people to identify themselves with the Christ who is the answer to the justice of God. And that is a wonderful thing to think of. And maybe when you think about excellent things and you just can't find anything else good to think about anybody, you know, thinking about Christ, what he's done for you and the fact that you don't deserve it, but look at what he's done. That might be a pretty good thing to think of too. If we can assist you this morning, please come as we are led in song by Charlie. Charlie?